Rebuild or replace transmission, $3,200. Anti-lock brake system, $1,000. Rebuild or replace engine, $2,400. Truth is, once your manufacturer's warranty runs out, it's all on you. Every last cent. Get protection for covered repairs with a vehicle service contract from Toco Warranty. Unlike other companies, with Toco, there's no down payment, and the monthly payments are really affordable. Not sure how long you're keeping your car? At Toco, you can pay as you go. Keep your hard-earned cash and call Toco Warranty right now at 800-222-2313 to save big money on covered auto repairs. Prices vary by vehicle, but for about the cost of a tank of gas per month, a Toco plan has your back on expensive covered car repairs. Monthly payments are very affordable. Get your free quote now. Call Toco at 800-222-2313. That's 800-222-2313. 800-222-2313. Cancellation fee may apply. Subject to eligibility. Not available in Missouri and Washington. Waiting period and deductible apply. Coverage provided and administered by Warrantech Corporation or its affiliates. Not affiliated with any manufacturer or dealership. Visit TocoWarranty.com for complete terms and conditions.
Live, worldwide, Sports Byline USA. And here's host, Ron Barr.
And wherever you might be across this great country of ours and around the world, I'm Ron Barr. Good to have you with us for this edition of Sports Byline. You know, when I say around the world, we are heard literally around the world because we're heard on the American Forces Network. That's 500 stations in 177 countries. And I'm happy to say that starting May 1st, you're going to be able to hear us around the world in another way because the interviews from Sports Byline, this program, are going to be heard on all worldwide United Airlines flights. So if you happen to be traveling and you want to hear one of the interviews, all you have to do is go to the entertainment system on that United flight and check it out, and we're right there with you. And we're very, very proud of this. I'd like to thank United Airlines for picking us to do this. So again, we're expanding even further. Of course, we have iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, SiriusXM, so you can catch us just about anywhere you can imagine. Also, all you have to do is go to one of the 200 U.S. radio stations as well. The owner of a Las Vegas casino, Derek Stevens, stands to make a boatload of money if number 7 seed Michigan can win the national championship. Now, on March 14th, Stevens put down $12,500 on the Wolverines as a long shot, and now they are in the Sweet 16 and don't appear like they don't plan to slow things down soon. He will collect $1 million if he can pull it off. Michigan upset number 2 seed Louisville on Sunday in the round of 32, rallying from a deficit of 9 points to win at 73-69 and making an unlikely trip to the Sweet 16 as a number 7 seed. And they'll next play number 3 seed Oregon, and that's going to be in Kansas City for a chance to get one step closer to that hefty payout for Stevens. And the Wolverines' odds to win it sit at 18-1. 18-1. We're going to be talking baseball in just a second. If you're a baseball fan, a true baseball fan, then you know the name Kent DeKalvy, former Major League reliever who played 16 years, 12 of those with the Pirates. Had that submarine delivery and also won a World Series championship with the 79 Pirates. And then the author Tom Bunovich will be here as well. Got a great book. I'll tell you nothing about it because I want you to hear it from him. Sign this number 2, your stories about sports heroes. We've got you on Sports Byline.
Allergy congestion. Cut grass. Cat on the sofa. Dust in the carpet. Whenever allergy congestion makes you feel trapped, break through with Allegra D for 5-in-1 24-hour multi-symptom relief. Allegra D combines a non-drowsy antihistamine with a powerful decongestant for fast relief that starts working in just 1 hour. Break through allergy congestion with Allegra D. Use only as directed. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com.
Nobody really needs or wants home security until it's too late. You've heard the statistics about how many burglaries there are per day. You see the news. You know there are people out there that do bad things. The best way to help protect your home and your property is with an ADT monitored system from Protect Your Home, an ADT authorized premier provider. Call right now to get a free wireless home security system valued at $850. An ADT monitored system can help protect your home from fires, theft, floods, and call for emergency help. Call now to find out more about our $850 $50 free wireless home security system and start enjoying the peace of mind of security today. Call 800-587-4281. 800-587-4281. 800-587-4281. This offer is for new customers only. Termination fees apply. $99 customer installation charge and 36-month monitoring agreement required. Offer details, license terms, and conditions available at secureathome.com.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. By now, you know all too well that SR22 auto insurance is way more than you'd ever want to pay. You probably thought you didn't have a choice, but you were wrong. Our company specializes in low-cost, very affordable SR22 auto insurance for high-risk drivers. We know that mistakes happen, so take pride in being able to offer absolutely free quotes for this very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. We're standing by at 800-758-0725. The only thing you need to do is stop waiting around while your monthly payments stay as high as they are. Our knowledgeable representatives are ready for your call at 800-758-0725. The quote is free, and we'll even handle the filings so you could start saving money every month even sooner. Call 800-758-0725. That's 800-758-0725. Once more, 800-758-0725.
The Home Depot is pouring more into paint. And during Pro Appreciation Week, all pros get gold status with 20% off pro-grade paint stains and primers. Plus, 5-gallon buckets of Kills 2 latex primer start at just $69.94. Nobody beats our prices, guaranteed. And during Pro Appreciation Week, pros that paint save even more with gold status. Now through March 26th. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Available in-store while supplies last. Must enter Pro Extra phone number at checkout for discount.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Kent Tekulve joins us on Sports Byline, the former major league reliever, 16 years in the majors, 12 of those 16 years in a Pirates uniform, and of course he was known for his submarine delivery. Kent, nice to have you with us. Why don't we see more pitchers using that submarine delivery?
I don't know, Ron. You know, it goes in phases. You know, for a while there, you know, when I came in, and then there were, you know, Quisenberry and a few guys behind me that were doing it, and then it seems like it faded out again, and it had faded out for quite a while before I started. Kind of goes in and out in spurts, but you know, basically, the one thing that you notice with most submarine pitchers, that the thing that they have in common is they're usually tall and lean with long arms and long legs, and, you know, it's kind of a leverage pitch. So you almost have to be a natural sidearmer, you know, as a youngster to develop the underhand style because of the way your body mechanics go and everything. It's a long, involved process, but, you know, basically you have to be tall, thin, and be a natural sidearmer. So that kind of cuts the pool down of candidates that are going to throw that way.
Also, when you take a look at the submarine delivery, it seemed to me you've got so much body motion going that you might find yourself out of control. Do you have to be really disciplined about your delivery and your mechanics when you're throwing in with that style?
Well, I think you have to a certain extent. You have to, like every pitcher does, you have to keep your weight back. You can't get out on your front foot too early. But really, you know, it's something that if you're a natural sidearmer and if you make the conversion and you do it often enough, it really becomes second nature, the timing of the delivery. It's just, you know, basically it's a leverage pitch. It's not, the big strong guys aren't the guys throwing it. It's, the guys like me that didn't have a muscle in their body. And you use the long arms and the long legs that you have to develop leverage. And the good thing about the submarine pitch, from my standpoint, is number one, obviously it's conducive to the sinker. And most sinking fastballs, at least if you can get them hit the top of it, do not go out of the ballpark. And number two, with the release being the opposite of the overhand pitcher, when you release the ball down low, it becomes more and more difficult to release the ball and actually throw it high. As you know, most overhand pitchers, the hardest thing for them to do is to get it down. Well, the hardest thing for a submariner to do is to throw it high. So with the sinking fastball and the ability to keep the ball down in the strike zone, that's a pretty good combination as far as getting a lot of ground balls and getting some people out.
Is the submarine delivery easier on the body? You know, in talking to knuckleballers, Tom Candy and I, Candiotti and I were chatting about it. He says you could throw that pitch, meaning the knuckleball, forever. And you pitched for 16 years, so I'm just assuming, or were you the exception rather than the rule?
Well, I think it's a combination of a couple things. Number one, I was just very fortunate that I was blessed with a body, with an arm, at least, that, you know, just did not wear out. I could go out and throw three innings one day, and I'd come back the next day and come to the ballpark, put my uniform on, and didn't feel like I had pitched at all. So, you know, that was one of those things that was just a natural thing. Other people would throw that much and would get stiff and sore. I just didn't. But the other thing, and I'm not smart enough to understand this by any stretch of the imagination, but the doctors that I had talked to told me that the submarine motion is easier on the arm because your arm is down in its more natural position. You know, as you walk around all day long, your arm is down at your side. That's where it was intended to be. So with the submarine motion, that's where your arm pretty much is, whereas an overhand motion, you know, your arm's up directly over your head. Well, we don't walk around all day long with our arms up over our head, so that's not a natural position for it to be in. I didn't pick the submarine motion because it was easier on my arm. I picked it because I could get some people out that way, but I think a byproduct of that was the fact that it was, you know, physically easier on my arm and possibly added to the factor, you know, that I was not as stiff and sore the day after I threw.
Kent, one of the things that I've always wondered about, and I think a lot of fans have as well, if you take a look at relievers, if they throw an inning here and an inning the next night, then they're not available the third night. When you look at pitchers, and the starters will go six, seven, maybe eight innings, why can't a reliever go more than a couple of nights throwing an inning and an inning and an inning?
That's a real good question because, you know, up until the last 15 years or so, the relievers did pitch a lot of innings. You know, back in the mid to late 70s, early 80s even, when I was doing that job, our job description was basically for a closer was to pitch from the seventh inning on anywhere from two runs down to three runs up if your club needed you. That was kind of what we did. You know, we pitched when our club was behind to try to keep the game close. We pitched, you know, obviously with our club ahead late in the game to try to save the game, and we pitched anywhere from the seventh inning on. All of a sudden, for some reason, it changed, and now the closer's role is to pitch in the ninth inning, only with the lead, only to start the inning. So I've always disagreed with the theory of using a reliever that way because basically what you're doing is you're taking your best relief pitcher, supposedly the guy with the best stuff in your bullpen, and you're limiting the number of innings that you get, you know, that he gets to pitch to help your ball club out over the course of a season. You know, you get a good closer nowadays, and he may pitch, what, 60, 65, 70 innings at the most. That's a big year. And, you know, the body is physically capable of doing more than that. And if he's not pitching those innings, then who is? Well, it's a second-line pitcher that's, you know, the other team has a better chance of scoring on. So I don't particularly agree with the current theory of how to use relief pitchers. I think there's, especially your stoppers and your closers, are capable of doing more to help your club win more games.
I agree with you. One other thing, too, is that if you take a look at pitching and you look at the game and the way it's pitched today, pitchers are not expected to go the complete distance. Get me into the six, and I got that middle relief guy. Get me to the setup guy. Get me to the closer type of thing. Have they set the seed in pitchers' minds so that they don't think in terms? You know as well as I do, it was a badge of honor to finish a game.
Well, I think what has happened is because managers have changed in the way that they've used pitchers, pitchers have changed in what they expect of themselves. You know, in the quote, good old days, the starter's job was to get the game to the closer, which was, you know, seven innings or eight innings and get it to the last guy. Well, then pretty soon, you know, it was like, you know, give me five or six and then we'll get this guy in for the seventh and eighth and we'll get this guy in for the ninth. Then we'll, you know, then get me to the fifth and we'll get this guy for a couple innings and this guy will pitch one and this guy will pitch one. And when you start expecting pitchers to do that and you're, as a manager, you're happy with that, then that's what the players are going to condition themselves to do because, you know, your job is to go out there and do what your manager wants you to do. So, you know, if I go all out for six innings and just spend it in the first six innings, if that's what he wants, that's what I'll condition myself to do, where before a starter would learn how to pace himself, how to, you know, if he got down to the bottom of the order and things, there was nothing going on, kind of relax a little bit and save a little bit through the bottom of the order and then tune it back up against the top of the order. Doesn't seem like pitchers nowadays do that. The other thing that has evolved, because pitchers aren't expected to go as far in the ball game, they don't throw as many strikes. You know, if you got 120 pitches to throw on a night and you're only expected to throw six innings, you can throw 20 pitches an inning and that's not a problem. If you're supposed to go eight innings and you only got 120 pitches, then you've got to throw a lot less. You've got to throw more strikes. So I don't think starting pitchers in particular are really that conscientious of throwing strikes early in the count, even though a guy like Maddox proves that that's the way to get people out, get ahead in the count.
Kat, you never knew when you were going to be coming into a ball game, but I'm sure you were able to read a ball game and kind of get a feel for it so you get yourself ready mentally and emotionally. What was that read like? Give me some insight.
Well, basically it's knowing your manager, knowing what his tendencies are. And with Chuck Tanner, it was a pretty easy thing to do with Pittsburgh because, we had Enrique Romo, who was kind of like our version of the middle guy. We had Grant Jackson, who was the left-handed setup guy, and then I was a closer. But we would work, earlier on in the game. So you could kind of tell, where the right-handed hitters were coming up, what pinch hitters they had, what part of the lineup you were in. And Chuck was pretty quick with the hook. He was ready. He always was a manager, which was beneficial for me, who felt like if I've got a lead, I want to get my bullpen in the game as quick as I can. I want to turn it over to these guys and give them a little working room. So I kind of had an idea of how he was thinking, and therefore I kind of knew when he might be looking to put me in the game.
We only got about 45 seconds before we break here, Kent, but were you always ready when you were called out of the bullpen? Was there ever a time you weren't?
A couple times, probably when I left the bullpen, I wasn't ready. But I was pretty fortunate. It only took me about 12 to 14 pitches to get loose from Stone Cold just sitting there. And, if I needed to be, I always told Tanner, if he would take his time going out to the mound and just spend some time talking to the pitcher before he brought me in, even if he had just gotten me up, between the pitches I could get in the bullpen and the 8 pitches that I got on the mound, that would be enough for me to get ready. So I was never not ready when the first hitter came up. I might not have been ready when I walked through that bullpen gate, but I knew I would be there by the time it had to be done.
Kent, hold on. We're going to keep going with you. Kent Tekulve has joined us, and you, 16 years in the majors, 12 in a Pirates uniform, and he had 184 career saves. We'll continue across the country and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network and the Internet with you on Sports Byline.
Hi, I'm Dr. Robert Clapper, Chief of Orthopedic Surgery at Cedars-Sinai Medical Group in Los Angeles, California. Dedicated to your health, your life, and your sports. As a weekend warrior, you know about sports injuries and pain. Exercise is an important element in keeping your body's core in good shape to minimize sports injuries. But when you are in pain, there is one product that I recommend to my patients, and that is Blue Goo Gel. Blue Goo consists of a proprietary formula developed specifically for the treatment of inflammation and general muscle aches and strains. I recommend Blue Goo for my patients coping with hip and knee pain before surgery, especially bursitis and tendonitis. Give Blue Goo a try. Call 1-888-330-0123 and you'll receive a 1-week supply of Blue Goo absolutely free. The makers of Blue Goo are even paying the shipping. The number again is 1-888-330-0123. If you want more information on Blue Goo, visit online at www.dothegoo.com.
Now available at select Big Five stores near you.
Attention to anyone that's written a book or wants to write a book. The process is not that complicated. Take a first step. Even if you write a page a day, you'll build momentum and your book will become a reality. The hard part is getting it published. That's when you need to call Page Publishing. They've got hundreds and hundreds of thank yous from different new authors, just like you. They make the process of publishing your new book and getting it sold online a simple process. You can learn how simple it is right now by calling for your free Page Publishing new author submission kit. One quick 3-minute phone call, that's all it takes to get free information and learn how you can get your book published. Pick up your phone right now and call us 24 hours a day at this number. 800-603-0885. 800-603-0885. 800-603-0885. That's 800-603-0885.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-760-4895. 800-760-4895.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-760-4895. 800-760-4895. 800-760-4895. That's 800-760-4895.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Taking a look at the scoreboard in the NBA, Charlotte 109, Orlando 102. Hornets come from behind. They win this one by outscoring the Magic in the fourth quarter, 32-20. And Charlotte's third straight win, with Walker leading the way. He had 22. Again, Charlotte 109, Orlando 102. Boston 109, 100, better than Indiana. Celtics shot 51%. They had five players in double figures. Isaiah Thomas led them with 25. Bradley added 18 more. Boston hit 11 threes, and they were also 12 of 14 from the free throw line. Oklahoma City big over Philadelphia, 122-97. The Thunder led by 13 at the half, 25 after three quarters, shot 55%, and out-rebounded the Sixers by 35 boards. Westbrook another triple-double with 18 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 assists. Also, it was Chicago 117, Detroit 95. Bulls hot from the field, shooting 59%, hitting 11 threes. Marotic was the high man for Chicago with 28. Butler added 16 more. Bulls had a pair of 32-point quarters. And on the ice in the NHL, it was Toronto 5, Columbus 2. And that's your sports update.
Patroni Vineyards produces Paggio alla Pietra, California's first gold medal-winning Sangiovese Grosso grape, cloned from Italy's Brunello di Montesino. To enjoy Paggio alla Pietra's rich, seductive flavors, visit PatroniVineyards.com and become a wine club member today.
Kent Tekulve has joined us here on Sports Byline USA. Kent is also the all-time major league leader in relief appearances with 1,050. And, of course, he was a part of the championship Pirates team back in 1979 when they called him We Are the Family. Speaking of that, you had a player off of that family who was a major part of that team who passed away. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about him.
Yeah, Willie Stargell,
right,
the captain of the ball club. He was everything that he was advertised to be. Sometimes you hear about players and you say, well, yeah, was he really that good? Well, yes, Willie Stargell really was that good. He was that genuine. He was the kind of person who not only cared about the game and knew how to play the game, knew how to prepare, knew how to treat his teammates, knew how to treat the opposition, knew how to respect the game, but he was also the kind of person that you wanted as your friend, because you knew that no matter what was going on, good, bad, or otherwise, he was going to be on your side. So, there wasn't one player on that team or any of the other Pirate teams that I played with that didn't draw part of their personality from Willie Stargell. And I know for a fact that, a whole lot of the type of person I am and the way I handle things, whether it be on the baseball field when I was playing or now, in another phase of my life, is not just a direct result of being around Willie and having those qualities that he had kind of rub off on me. And, I'm sure I'm a much better person because of it.
Let me ask you, we always hear about players being influences in the clubhouses from either a manager or other players. Give me a tangible example of something that Willie did that exemplified him being that influence.
Well, Willie was kind of a quiet leader. He didn't say a whole lot. He didn't have to say a whole lot. He wasn't one of those guys that came around and said, you need to do this and you need to do that, and we're going to do it this way and we're going to do it that way. You learned more from Willie just by watching Willie. One of the great lessons I learned early on in my career, and I was fortunate in the fact that my locker was like out catty corner in the clubhouse from Willie, so every time I sat down in my chair after the game, I was kind of looking in his direction anyway. And you could never tell, when you looked at Willie after the game was over with, whether he went 4-for-4 and had, 8 RBIs and 3 home runs, or if he was 0-for-4 and struck out 4 times. He would come in, that day was over, turn the page, get ready for tomorrow, start thinking about tomorrow's game, who's pitching, how do I get ready. That was the even-keel approach that he had. So, from that standpoint, you didn't learn how to play or how to handle yourself by him telling you something. It was more just by observing how he did it himself. Now, on the other side of the spectrum, one of the things that he came up with that was obviously very prominent in 1979 were the stars. That was his invention. He came up with the idea of passing out these stars, and it started out as an idea just to, you know, anybody who did something nice for him or something that he felt special about, you know, he would just kind of reach over and stick one of those stars on the lapel of your shirt or, you know, whatever when you were playing. Well, then he decided that, you know, he was going to do that for his teammates, and if you made a good play or made an extra effort or, you know, hustled and, you know, stretched a single into a double or did something positive for the ball club, he wanted to recognize that, and he would put that star on your hat after the game was over with. Well, you know, there were a whole lot of us, obviously, that took a lot of pride in those stars and would actually go and kind of lobby a little bit every once in a while for him. You know, mine was fairly simple. Well, win or a save, I got a star. That was, you know, the easy formula for mine. But, you know, a lot of the other guys were always, you know, hey, Willie, you know, did you see me, you know, take that extra base tonight? Yeah, I think I should get a star. Well, that was kind of a tangible thing that he did because he was a nice person, because he wanted to do it. But the byproduct was it made you always want to go that extra mile on the field. You know, you should do it anyway as a player, but it gave you a reason to go out there and give it that little bit extra. Bust it down the line on a routine single just in case the outfielder bobbled the ball. 99 times out of 100, he's not going to, but if you bust it down there every time, that one time, you're going to get the extra base. It may mean the difference in a run in a ball game. Well, that star was kind of your carrot that was always out in front of you to make sure you played the game the way it was supposed to be played, without really knowing that that's why you were doing it. You know, you just did the things the right way because that's the way Willie wanted to play the game.
You know, I've talked to other players about leadership because it's so hard to define it and who steps forward. I think a lot of people think it's that rah-rah guy. But another guy that was a leader with the Giants was Willie McCovey, and he was quite soft-spoken as well. When you look at Willie Stargell and Willie McCovey, those type of leaders, how does that start to develop on a team, and where does it come from on any given team?
I think it comes from the individual. I think that's an inborn trait in an individual, that they just have that quality. They have the ability. You know, anybody can tell somebody how to do something. That's easy to do. I can tell you, you know, you should, you know, change this radio show around and do it this way and this way because of this, 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 and this. But that's not being a leader. Being a leader is, you know, being willing to do it yourself. And, you know, you talk about the Stargells, you talk about the McCoveys, you talk about those types of people. And, you know, why is it always they're big, hulking people that don't say a whole lot? You know, the people that can come over and pinch your head off at a moment's notice, but they don't do it that way. They just go out, and they don't take any shortcuts. They do it the way it's supposed to be done. So I think it's just an inborn trait that they have that is a natural thing for them. I don't think they try to be leaders. I don't think they go out of their way to be a leader. And I don't think you train yourself to be a leader. I think it's something that's just inside of you. You naturally do things the right way. You have that ethic, and it just rubs off on the people around you.
Was he comfortable, meaning Willie Stargell? Because I know in talking to Willie McCovey, he told me he wasn't always comfortable to be looked to for leadership.
I don't know that Willie ever assumed that he was a leader. He was Pops. Yeah, he was the captain of the team. He had that mantle. But I don't know that he ever looked at it that way. I think he looked at it as, you know, just doing what he did. I'm going to go out, and I'm going to do things the right way every day, day in and day out. And that's how I'm going to be a leader. I don't have a responsibility that if the team is slumping, to find a way to get them out of the slump. I don't have the responsibility of if this guy is struggling a little bit about going over and, you know, patting him on the back or giving him a kick in the rear end to get him going. That wasn't the way Willie perceived his leadership role. His leadership role basically entailed, I'll do things the right way every day, and they can follow me.
Is there a commonality about the personality of closers, Kent?
I think so. I think, you know, there are different ways that you handle it. Obviously, you know, Goose was one of the ones, you know, you could almost see the smoke coming out of his ears and fire breathing out of his nose. You know, when he would go out there, I was more of the calm demeanor, everything was under control type of guy. But I think, you know, the one thing that he said was, and I think the one thing that we all have in common, at least the guys that were successful at it, is you feel a responsibility to your teammates to close the deal. I mean, they have worked so hard all night long. You know, it's been 95 degrees. They're sweating like crazy. And you're getting to walk out there and throw 8 or 10 pitches, and everybody comes out and shakes your hand at the end of the game. Well, that's nice, but, you know, you've got to get the job done. That's what you need to do, is go out there and get it done. And probably more than any other player on the team, the closer controls the emotion of the ball club. You know, if you've got a ball club that your closer is going out there every time he's got a chance to save a ball game and he's getting the job done, that club goes into late-inning situations with a lot of confidence, and the whole ball club becomes confident. The offense relaxes. They score a couple extra runs because they know they probably already have enough. They can take a chance. They can do this. They can do that. A team that's not getting the job done out of the bullpen, especially the closer, then the offense is a little tight. You know, do we have enough? Is this, you know, maybe we better try to get one more run because I'm not sure if this guy can hold it or not. So you control the emotional psyche of your ball club probably more than any other player on the team, because every night, if it's close, and those are the games that you have to win to make a difference in a pennant race, if it's close, it's going to come down to you. And if you can get the job done, not all the time, but a good percentage of the time, then your team's going to be confident and you're going to, you know, be a contributing factor to the ball club. If you're going bad, you can be just as much of a negative factor to your ball club, even though you're only pitching to a couple batters late in the game, because all of a sudden panic sets in late in the ball game. So, yes, you have to have the mentality that, you know, you're going to get the job done. You have to have a short memory and forget about the days when you don't get it done. But probably more than anything, you control the emotion of your ball club and can really make a winning ball club something, you know, that happens because of the fact that you look at most winning ball clubs, they've got a closer they can count on. So in the late innings, they know they're going to win.
Ken, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on, because you talk from the heart, you talk from the mind, as well as knowing this game, and you talk so intelligently about it. You are welcome back here anytime on Sports Byline, my friend.
Well, it's my pleasure, Ron. Good talking to you again.
Kent Tekulve, former Major League reliever, and of course you know him for his submarine delivery, 184 career saves, and also is the all-time Major League leader in relief appearances with 1,050, and he was on that Pittsburgh Pirates 79 We Are Family championship team. We'll take a break, come back on the other side, continue across the country and around the world with you on America's Sports Talk Show.
Hey there, did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park, or the beach, or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop, for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right. Get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
800-797-1256. 800-797-1256. That's 800-797-1256.
Tired of calls, levies, and liens from the IRS, or hiring others who don't get the job done? Call Wall & Associates and you'll never talk to the IRS again. The IRS has a program to eliminate tax debt, and Wall & Associates professionals are trained to maximize its benefits for you. You always speak with a live person with real support and real knowledge. We've helped thousands of taxpayers like you settle their tax debt with the IRS for a fraction of what they owe. We solve tax problems. Call Wall & Associates now, 800-480-5708. We have the professionals who know how to solve tax problems. If you owe money to the IRS, your tax problems are not going away by themselves, and the passage of time will only make matters worse. Act now, before it's too late. Call Wall & Associates right now to speak to a professional tax relief agent. Call 800-480-5708. That's 800-480-5708. Again, 800-480-5708.
Not too long ago, it felt good to withdraw your cash from the bank, didn't it? For a vacation or a new car. But today, withdrawing your own cash has become risky. Pat Boone here for Swiss America. According to The Secret War, a new Swiss America white paper, I learned that all banks are now required to spy on you and me for the government, and then report any financial behavior deemed suspicious or unusual. You must read The Secret War. It's free. Truth is, I believe the government's new war against cash is really a war against us all. But the secret is now out. So please, get and read The Secret War.
Pick up your phone and call right now. 800-932-5517. 800-932-5517. 800-932-5517. Once again, that's 800-932-5517.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Tom Bunovich joins us, and he has a new book out called Sign This, Your Stories About Our Sports Heroes. And this book recounts Tom's many years in the sports memorabilia business, and it has personal stories about the game's best players, and it also has a list of the top 10 signers along with the top 10 jerks. What was the motivation, Tom, for writing this?
Well, I was in the sports collectible business where I brought guests to autograph shows for about 15 years, and I thought I'd put some of the tales of some of those signings to books. So that's what I did. I put that out. The second book, I have two books out. One is Sign This and Sign This Too. Second book is stories from readers of book one about their memorable autograph encounters, both good and bad.
When you take a look at memorabilia and getting it signed, it seems like to me it comes down to two things: the athletes, of course, and then the people and the way they go about trying to get the autographs and everything. And I've said on this show, I've been very defensive of the athlete because I don't think most people understand that when the athlete is at the ballpark or getting ready for a ball game, that's their preparation for the job that they do. And I think most people have expectation that they ought to be signing these things. And I don't think that that's an expectation that they have an unlimited right to.
Well, I think you're right, and I think the biggest thing is supply and demand. Back in the 70s and 80s, there was a demand, but not since the autograph became worth something. In the 80s, when it was affixed to items, especially for superstar and Hall of Fame athletes. What's happened over the years, demand has gotten greater. Obviously, there's a lot of ways to make money at this business. A lot of guys will get stuff signed, put it on eBay, put it on their own website, make a few bucks on the side. And I think athletes get to the point and have gotten to the point that they're a little bit disgusted that money is being made on their name and their good nature, that they do sign items, and again, they're the public being able to make money on their name.
What expectations should the fans have when it comes to athletes signing autographs?
Well, it depends on your circumstances. At a charitable event, I think there's a little more, the athletes are a little more understanding and want to sign things. I think, as you mentioned, a ballpark or time to get ready for a ball game, their minds on what they're approaching. Also, be like hotels where guys will hang out at a hotel where the team will stay on the road and expect to get autographs. So, although that's getting more difficult because the hotels are clamping down on people hanging out there and trying to get all the freebies they can. The other thing I would say is it's sort of a little underworld business, the autograph business, where, again, guys can get items signed, wheel and deal and trade them and make a few bucks. I mean, sometimes you put an autograph on a baseball and it becomes a $100 baseball. So what you're looking at is an opportunity. If a guy can hang out in the right place, he can make a few bucks on the side.
Do you think athletes are obligated? Should they be obligated to sign memorabilia or just to give out autographs?
I think they don't mind it. I think what they despise is the guy that has 7-8 things and the guy that has the items that are worth a lot of money, where they know it's not so much a keepsake, it's more of an item that's going to be sold. And I think that's what they're offended by. More and more athletes are starting to learn how to say no. They're learning how to say, hey, I don't sign that type stuff. I'll sign a picture, but I won't sign a baseball bat or a basketball because I know it's worth more money. So that's what's happened, too. They fought back in that manner. I don't think athletes have an obligation, but I think it's part of the American culture where we expect them to. And, again, as I say in the books, it's a little piece of their time. When you get an autograph, you feel like that you had that guy's attention, a little piece of that guy's time, and then you have a keepsake. Of course, sometimes it is a keepsake. Other times it's a good profit maker.
You're a memorabilia promoter, and you've had different get-togethers for that. And what most people don't understand is that the athletes charge at those type of events sometimes, most of the time, for signing stuff. And yet it is a business, is it not?
No question. What's happened is over the last 10 years, the fees of athletes have risen to the point that it's just not financially profitable for promoters to bring guys to guests. I'll use Willie Mays for an example. In 1980, it was $10,000 to bring to a show. 1991, he was 25.
In 1995, he was 35,000. Now it approaches as much as 75,000. So it's a big risk for a promoter to bring a guy like that to a card show. What else has happened is so many guys have done so many appearances, the demand is so less for these guys that they just can't, a promoter can't get his money back. Now the new guys playing in the current day, they don't really need to do these appearances. They're a nice little change on the side deal, but they've got high fees. I saw where Alex Rodriguez is doing a signing next month, $319 to sign a baseball. I mean, the next one I'm going to throw at you is going to blow your mind. Mark McGwire is doing a signing for a company in New York. It's $1,100. You heard me right, $1,100 to sign an item that's related to the 500 home run club, anybody in that club. So those are the types of things happening. What's happening is more collectors are saying, heck with it. It's just too expensive, number one. Number two, promoters are saying, heck with it. I can't put that money up to risk. So you're seeing less appearances by athletes, and you're seeing less promoters. There's only five or six I would classify as major promoters left around the country.
You, in this book, tell some great stories. Talk to me about Muhammad Ali.
Very personal individual. Can't talk a lot, restricted by physical ailment, but very personal. I almost think like he's the kind of guy that's went through life and said, hey, I fooled all of you. You know, it was all big act, and, you know, that's the way I sold tickets. And when he does appearances, now he's doing a signing, and it's, again, hold on to your hat, $800 to sign a boxing glove, I should say. So what you're looking at are those kind of fees. Now, 15 years ago, it was $15 to sign that same glove. So if we don't know what we know now, I guess we'd have loaded up a truckload. But Ali, very personal individual, doesn't do a lot of signings. Can't, obviously, limited by physical, can't write real fast, can only do about 100 every two or three hours. So that's the case of, Muhammad Ali. Good guy. Funny guy.
Yeah, Bobby Knight also is somebody who has a volatile personality and takes a beating from the media. How have you found him as far as somebody that signs?
Again, circumstances, which most of the autographs are circumstance. If you're there and the guy and the person you're trying to get autographed feels like you're a legitimate collector, I don't think they mind signing. Again, if you're not interrupting something, if you're done in a sometimes people can be obnoxious about it. They don't like that. But most of the time, guys will sign. Knight's a pretty good signer, although he'll give you a rough time about it and is not going to sign more than one item at any time.
Any other favorite stories among those that signed?
Michael Jordan. He's in the second book. Guy followed him back from the Indiana Pacers Bulls game to the hotel. Interrupted him when he was eating with a couple of his teammates, sat down with him and showed him his high school yearbook and spent an hour and a half there talking about the high school yearbook. And just like he said, guy couldn't believe it. So an hour and a half he was sitting with one of the most popular men on the planet, acting like he was one of his good buddies. Also another Jordan one. Kid asking for an autograph, 10-year-old kid asking for an autograph. He told the kid, give me a quarter. The guy sitting next to him, man, I was really offended. But came back, the kid, Jordan pulled out a baseball, autographed it, and put a $100 bill on top of it. And the kid, in his excitement, ran away and dropped the bill and kept the baseball. there's a lot of good stories in there. In the second book from the public, guys that went beyond the call of duty to be good guys. A guy like Walter Payton, Darryl Waltrip, people that seemed like, you know, larger than life. They enjoyed signing autographs. They enjoyed meeting fans. And sometimes you have a memory in your life that lasts, every little detail seemed to last forever.
Tom, is there a particular sport in which you found, and this is a general question and a generality, that you found that the athletes are pretty good at, as far as signing?
Hockey players, number one. Basketball players, we're talking pro here, are the worst. Basketball players don't even want to be bothered. Hockey players, generally good guy signers. Football ranges from the stardom, ranges from the access you have to them. Baseball is number one collectible. I tell people, of all the collectibles sold, I will guarantee at least 50% are baseball-related. Probably can take the rest of them and take the other 50%. But baseball is king in the world of collectibles. Always has been, always will be.
I'm surprised that you didn't have auto racing or NASCAR racing in there.
Auto racing is good guys. They're good guys. It's sort of its own little world, though. Most collectors of other type memorabilia aren't really autograph collectors in the auto racing field. But those into racing are into it big time. They enjoy getting them. There's not too much of the drivers are good signers. They like signing for the public. They don't mind. They understand that's part of the responsibility. So therefore, they're a little more apt to sign if you approach them, as opposed to baseball, football, players, basketball players, when, circumstance, how many, their attitude, a lot of other factors. But racers are good signers. But again, it's different. It's not the same type collectors that would be collecting other sports.
I know you have a list of top 10 jerks. Who's on it?
Willie Mays, number one. Tough guy to deal with, brutal. Draws a big crowd because you can't get a freebie out of him. I always tell people that. Had him four times, but, man, he draws a big crowd, but you have to fight him. Ricky Henderson, Eric Rett, the old Tampa Bay Buck, still owes me $500 to this day. Mike Schmidt, some of the names won't surprise you. Mr. October, Reggie Jackson. Could be two different people. Could be the nicest guy in the world or turn around and be the biggest dork in the world. So you know what you're going to get. Joe DiMaggio really got to be money hungry toward the end. Loved doing these signings, loved making money, but complained about signing everything and what have you. No surprise on here, Pete Rose. Pete's two different guys. He can be the good, nicest guy in the world, or he can be a total jerk. And I think sometimes it's his attitude, his sort of sarcastic attitude that comes off and leaves a bad taste.
Is it a no-win situation, though, for the athlete? I've made this comment before that if they signed 50 autographs, that the 51st person that doesn't get that autographed is going to be upset with them?
I don't think so. I think that what you have is an establishment of a pattern. Does a guy say, hey, I try to sign as many as I can, I try to meet the demand as good as I can, I try to be nice about it, I try to be personable. When I'm given the opportunity, I'll stop and sign. You've got guys like Brooks Robinson, Harmon Killebrew, the late Otto Graham, Billy Williams. These guys were tremendous guys who would sign for anything and enjoyed signing for the public, enjoyed the adulation that went with it. So sometimes, it's just how their attitude and how they come off over the course of time. And they may have a bad day like anybody else, but generally over the course of a year, they're going to display a behavior that says, hey, he's either a good guy or he's a jerk.
One of the other criticisms made of athletes is, well, they're making an awful lot of money. They shouldn't be paid anything for their autograph. Agree or disagree?
I disagree, but I think there has to be reason. It has to be a reasonable fee. What's happened is the fees have gotten out of hand. You're looking at $50,000-plus to bring today's superstars to show, and if you're trying to sell 400 or 500 autographs, you're looking at charges of $100 to $200, and those are tough to recoup. Also, I think they have a right to charge, but I do think that they should offer some opportunities as freebies. So that's where I stand on that.
What's your favorite autograph?
Favorite autograph? I'm a Steeler fan. So I love a lot of my old Steeler stuff that I've gotten over through the years that I've been able to enjoy and that's the stuff I collect, Steeler stuff.
What was the hardest autograph you had to get?
Hardest autograph you had to get. There's been some over the years that have been tough. Joe Green's not real personal. He was, but over the years he's gotten tougher. Bradshaw's pretty easy about it, but getting near him, he's generally keeps on the move, hard to pin down. Those are some of the guys that good and bad. But autographs are a business where you got to enjoy it. You got to make it fun to go out and try to get it. It's not, don't get obsessed with the money. Don't get obsessed with how much it's worth. Get obsessed with the enjoyment in it, how much you enjoy it, how many memories it brings back. One of my favorite autographs is from a guy named Jesse Gonder. Remember him in the 60s? The pirate broadcaster when I was growing up, Bob Prince, would always say when Jesse came to bat, let's go way up yonder with Jesse Gonder. And I got Jesse to sign a card once and said, let's go way up yonder. And I look at that and it brings such memories back. It's not worth a whole lot, but that's truly what collecting should be all about.
You got about 20 seconds. Is there an autograph you'd like to get that you don't have?
Yeah, Babe Ruth. I had one, sold it, and I've never replaced it. Boy, it's tough to find, especially to make sure you got the real thing.
You got
anyway,
it.
If you want to get the book, signthisbook.com.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Appreciate it. Thank
Tom
you.
Bunovich. And again, the name of this book is Sign This Number 2, Your Stories About the Sports Heroes. Very interesting about those that are on the list of 10 best and the 10 worst signers. We're going to come back on the other side as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline.
Dish TV is better than cable TV. Why? Because you can save 45% on packages compared to your high-priced cable bill. Wow. Take those giant scissors out and cut the cable and save with Dish TV. Plus, you get a free DVR upgrade to record your favorite shows and free installation. And with Dish Anywhere, you can watch TV for free on your mobile device. Act fast. You can save hundreds of dollars. Does your cable company do that for you? I don't think so. Get all the best TV programming at your fingertips at a fraction of the price of cable TV. So say adios, arrivederci, goodbye to the high cable bill, and save up to 45% on Dish TV packages today. These are limited time offers and can change at any time. Call fast. 800-405-2561. 800-405-2561. 800-405-2561. That's 800-405-2561.
Rebuild or replace transmission, $3,200. Anti-lock brake system, $1,000. Rebuild or replace engine, $2,400. Truth is, once your manufacturer's warranty runs out, it's all on you. Every last cent. Get protection for covered repairs with a vehicle service contract from Toco Warranty. Unlike other companies, with Toco, there's no down payment, and the monthly payments are really affordable. Not sure how long you're keeping your car? At Toco, you can pay as you go. Keep your hard-earned cash and call Toco Warranty right now at 800-222-2313 to save big money on covered auto repairs. Prices vary by vehicle, but for about the cost of a tank of gas per month, a Toco plan has your back on expensive covered car repairs. Monthly payments are very affordable. Get your free quote now. Call Toco at 800-222-2313. That's 800-222-2313. 800-222-2313. Cancellation fee may apply. Subject to eligibility. Not available in Missouri and Washington. Waiting period and deductible apply. Coverage provided and administered by Warrantech Corporation or its affiliates. Not affiliated with any manufacturer or dealership. Visit TocoWarranty.com for complete terms and conditions.
Are you a parent of a 2 to 7-year-old? Listen closely for an exciting free radio offer. By now, you've probably heard of ABC Mouse, the award-winning and revolutionary online learning program that's changing the lives of early learners everywhere.
ABC Mouse is like a little one-on-one teacher. It has helped her so much.
Designed by teachers and early childhood learning experts, ABC Mouse seamlessly aligns with what your child is already learning in school. And with over 7,000 learning activities and more than 650 lessons, it's the most comprehensive early learning site on earth.
I have been teaching for 13 years, and I've never seen a program like ABC Mouse. It encompasses science, math, reading, social studies.
It's just endless what they can learn on ABC Mouse. I've always had to use 20 websites, and now I can just use one.
Right now, we're offering a special radio promo to try it free for a month. But you have to go to abcmouse.com/free to claim your free month. That's abcmouse.com/free. abcmouse.com/free.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Another check of the numbers on the scoreboard. Light schedule on the ice in the NHL saw Toronto slide by Columbus 5-2. Leafs had 32 shots. They also had a pair of two-goal periods with Matthews getting his 34th goal and Saad his 22nd. Islanders 3-2 better than the Rangers. A two-goal third period wins this one for the Isles. Ladd's 21st goal of the season. That was the game winner. Over on the NBA side, Charlotte 109, Orlando 102. The Hornets come from behind to win this one by outscoring the Magic in the fourth quarter 32-20. And Charlotte's third straight victory, Walker with 22. Boston 109, Indiana 100. Celtics shot 51%. They had five players in double figures. They hit 11 threes, and they also did pretty well at the free throw line, hitting 12 of 14. Thomas with 25 in that one. Washington picks up another victory, 104-100 over Atlanta, with Beal leading the way with 28. Wall added 22 more. It was OKC, 122 in that one. Westbrook, another triple-double with 18 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 assists. OKC wins at 122-97. They led by 13 at the half and by 25 after three quarters, and they out-rebounded the 76ers by 35 boards. And the Chicago Bulls, 117, Detroit, 95. Bulls coming from behind and shooting hot from the field, 59%. They hit 11 threes. And that's your sports update.
This is America's...
Patroni Vineyards produces Paggio alla Pietra, California's first gold medal-winning Sangiovese Grosso grape, cloned from Italy's Brunello di Montesino. To enjoy Paggio alla Pietra's rich, seductive flavors, visit PatroniVineyards.com and become a wine club member today.
Very interesting hour as we spent some time talking some baseball with Kent DeKalvy. 16 years in the majors, 12 of those with the Pirates, where he won a World Series championship. But what made him unique as a reliever was the way he threw the ball, submarine delivery. And, of course, he was part of that 79 We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates World Series winning team. And Tom Buinovich, check out his book. It's a very interesting read. It's called Sign This, Number 2, Your Stories About Our Sports Heroes. I'm Ron Barr. Thanks for being a part of America's Sports Talk Show.
If you missed something from today's show, you can find it now on iHeartRadio Talk. That's iHeartRadio.com/talk. A special news and update station you control. Follow us on iHeartRadio Talk and stay in touch 24/7.
USA Radio News with Jules McKinney.
The number of people killed in today's terror attack in London has risen to 5, including the attacker. The number of hurt also up. Here's Acting Deputy Metropolitan Commissioner Mark Rowley today.
I should also say at this stage that we believe now approximately 40 people have been injured, including several with serious injuries, including 3 police officers, 2 of whom are in serious condition.
The attacker was shot by a police officer.
We think we know who the attacker is, and as I say, we're working to look at associates.
Raleigh says the investigation continues.
Our working assumption is that he was inspired by international terrorism.
British Prime Minister Theresa May says Great Britain will never give in to terrorism.
And we will all move forward together. Never giving in to terror and never allowing the voices of hate and evil to drive us apart.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, it's Angie with Daybreak USA. You know that I'm really into health, and if you are too and you care about what your kids are drinking, you'll want to hear about this Alexa Pure water pitcher. This gets rid of 99.9% of 92 contaminants found in tap water. You know, the stuff that's really bad for you, like lead, chromium-6, chlorine, pesticides, pharmaceutical drugs, and more. Go to waterwithangie.com or call 888-440-8150, 888-440-8150, or waterwithangie.com. And, you know, 33 states, a Harvard study shows 33 states have unsafe levels of harmful toxins in the drinking water. If you care about your health and the health of your kids, your spouse, you should be outraged. And while the communities and states attempt to get their acts together to get us the clean water we need, there is this safe alternative now. My family uses it. The water tastes absolutely delicious. It's the Alexa Pure Pitcher, 888-440-8150 or waterwithangie.com.
The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee says he has received evidence that members of the Trump transition team were under surveillance after November's election. California Republican Devin Nunes told reporters about the surveillance.
What I've read bothers me, and I think it should bother the president himself and his team because I think some of it seems to be inappropriate.
He says it's possible Donald Trump's communications were swept up in the data collection. The top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee is ripping the panel's chairman over claims about surveillance.
I think it gravely concerning to the members of the committee that the chairman would receive information that is pertinent to the scope of our investigation. And instead of sharing that information with the committee, would share that information with the White House.
And President Trump was asked if he feels vindicated.
I somewhat do.
This is USA Radio News.
Ah, fresh powder. I'll get the skis.
Ugh, I can't.
Winter nasal congestion. Is it A, cold, B, sinus pressure, C, allergies?
I'm not sure.
For all of the above, the answer is D, Allegra D, a maximum strength decongestant plus a powerful non-drowsy antihistamine for 24 hours of relief.
Feel better?
Yep, feel like racing.
Hey, wait!
This winter, the answer is Allegra D. Look for Allegra D at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed.
Senator John McCain says the House Intelligence Committee is no longer the place for the investigation into Russian meddling in the U.S. election.
What we need to address this whole issue of what the Russians did, how they did it, the impact, and what we do about it, I now believe belongs in the hands of a select committee.
The Arizona Republican said the American people now know Congress no longer has the credibility to investigate Russian meddling. McCain said there is a tremendous chasm between the two senior members of the Intelligence Committee, California Republican Devin Nunes and California Democrat Adam Schiff. He was baffled that Nunes briefed President Trump with information that members of the Trump transition team were under surveillance after November's election without telling members of the committee first. And the wake for the New York City EMT run over and killed with her own ambulance will start tomorrow afternoon. Ethan Harp reports a Bronx courtroom was filled today with Jadira Arroyo's friends and co-workers while her accused murderer stayed in hiding.
EMTs and firefighters were ready for murder suspect Jose Gonzalez.
Please bring this guy to justice. Our sister did not die in vain.
But Gonzalez may not have been ready for them. His lawyer, Alice Fontier, says Gonzalez waived his right to appear.
Because he remains in very poor physical as well as mental health condition.
Lieutenant Jessica Duffy shared the Morrisania Station House with Arroyo. She's getting ready to say goodbye.
Full of emotions. You know, we're angry. We're sad. Some of us are still in shock.
For USA Radio News, I'm Jules McKinney.
Do you use the blue pill to charge your sex life? Have you been thinking about trying the blue pill? What if we can promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for the other pills, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pill delivers the exact same results for less than $3. We'll do the math for you. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. Want more? We'll give you 40 blue pills or 40 yellow pills for $99 and add 4 more pills free. You save more than $500. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what to do next. You need to call and get your 44 pills for just $99. Stop overpaying for the other blue pills. Call us and start saving a ton of money for the exact same results. Ordering is fast and easy with your pills delivered to your door in a non-marked package. 800-223-0992. 800-223-0992. 800-223-0992. That's 800-223-0992.
Live, worldwide, Sports Byline USA. And here's host, Ron Barr.
And wherever you might be across this great country of ours and around the world, good to have you with us for another edition of Sports Byline. Of course, we're moving closer and closer to the Sweet 16. It'll get started. That'll be coming up on Thursday, so I can't think of a better guest than to talk to Dale Brown. Dale spent 25 years as the head coach of the LSU Tigers. He grew up in North Dakota, where he got his first basketball coaching jobs. And his background as a kid growing up in North Dakota is fascinating as well. We'll talk to him about that. And he became the head coach of LSU in 1972, replacing Press Maravich. And his team earned 2 Final Four appearances, and 2 times he was named the National Coach of the Year. And he is a member of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame and Basketball Coaches Hall of Fame. And this I did not know about Dale, one of only 6 coaches in the SEC that have led their teams to 2 Final Fours or more. Now, Dale Brown being one, Billy Donovan another, Joe Hall at Kentucky, Rick Pitino, Nolan Richardson at Arkansas, and Adolph Rupp at Kentucky as well. He's also remembered as one of the most vocal critics of the NCAA because he said it legislated against human dignity. I want to talk to him about that because he was one of the most outspoken people about the way the NCAA did an investigation and some of the things it did. So we'll talk to him about all of that. And then Lincoln Mitchell's going to be with us. He's been with us before, but he has an article out, and it's very timely. It's about the Israeli team that played in the WBC, the World Baseball Classic. Of course, the championship coming up on Wednesday night between the United States and Puerto Rico. First time that the U.S. has ever been in the championship of the WBC. And he has written an analysis of the future of big league baseball in the context of a changing media, economic, and social environment. And he's a scholar who was on the faculty of Columbia University for many years. And the title of his book, we're not going to talk about the book, because he did that the last time he was here. But the title of his book is fascinating in itself. It's called Will Big League Baseball Survive? Globalization, the End of Television, Youth Sports, and the Future of Major League Baseball. I think you'll find it insightful. By the way, we have a brand new fan poll question up, and it's an interesting one. As you know, Colin Kaepernick opted out with the 49ers, and now he's trying to get a job with another team. But it appears that maybe he's being blackballed, and we're asking you whether you think he is or not. Good to have you with us on Sports Byline.
The Home Depot is pouring more into paint. And during Pro Appreciation Week, all pros get gold status with 20% off pro-grade paint, stains, and primers. Plus, 5-gallon buckets of Kiehl's 2 latex primer start at just $69.94. Nobody beats our prices, guaranteed. And during Pro Appreciation Week, pros that paint save even more with gold status. Now through March 26th, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Available in-store while supplies last. Must enter Pro Extra phone number at checkout for discount.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. By now, you know all too well that SR22 auto insurance is way more than you'd ever want to pay. You probably thought you didn't have a choice, but you were wrong. Our company specializes in low-cost, very affordable SR22 auto insurance for high-risk drivers. We know that mistakes happen, so take pride in being able to offer absolutely free quotes for this very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. We're standing by at 800-758-0725. The only thing you need to do is stop waiting around while your monthly payments stay as high as they are. Our knowledgeable representatives are ready for your call at 800-758-0725. The quote is free, and we'll even handle the filings so you could start saving money every month even sooner. Call 800-758-0725. That's 800-758-0725. Once more, 800-758-0725.
Tired of calls, levies, and liens from the IRS or hiring others who don't get the job done? Call Wall & Associates and you'll never talk to the IRS again. The IRS has a program to eliminate tax debt, and Wall & Associates professionals are trained to maximize its benefits for you. You always speak with a live person with real support and real knowledge. We've helped thousands of taxpayers like you settle their tax debt with the IRS for a fraction of what they owe. We solve tax problems. Call Wall & Associates now, 800-480-5708. We have the professionals who know how to solve tax problems. If you owe money to the IRS, your tax problems are not going away by themselves, and the passage of time will only make matters worse. Act now, before it's too late. Call Wall & Associates right now to speak to a professional tax relief agent. Call 800-480-5708. That's 800-480-5708. Again, 800-480-5708.
If you're 65 or older and suffering from knee pain, you may qualify for an advanced pain-relieving brace. Dr. Approved Medical will work with Medicare or insurance benefits to see if you qualify for these knee braces at little or no cost to you. The only way to see if you qualify is to call us, 800-816-0365. Don't let your knee pain get worse. Call now and get free shipping plus a free pedometer. 800-816-0365. 800-816-0365. Little to no cost with full insurance payment, copay, and deductible supply promo subject to qualification while supplies last.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Dale Brown joins us on Sports Byline USA. He spent 25 years as the head coach of the LSU Tigers. He also took his team to two Final Four appearances. Two times he was named the National Coach of the Year, and he's also remembered as one of the most vocal critics of the NCAA because he said it legislated against human dignity. You know, Dale, you've been out of basketball for a while, and I think you probably have had the opportunity to sit back and reflect not only on basketball but your life and your career as well. When you have those private moments and think about that, what jumps out to Dale Brown?
Well, I did say that. I said they legislated against human dignity and they practiced monumental hypocrisy. And when I tell you just a couple quick stories, if you don't mind, I think you'll understand where I came from. I was a no-name guy from North Dakota. Thank God I got a break by an ex-high school coach. It was the AD here, Carl Maddox. So I really was naive to a lot of things. But I saw almost immediately. It started in our 1981 Final Four year. Best team in the country, I thought at that time. We were in Alaska at the Alaskan Shootout. One of my guards from St. Louis, Mark Elkhorn, I took bed check, and he was real sick. And he was discolored, and I said, "You're not going to play in the tournament." "Coach, I'm fine. "No, you're not going to play." So he didn't play. So when we got back to Baton Rouge, Ron, I immediately got a doctor. Within 48 hours, the doctor called me. He says, "Coach, I got bad news." He said, "Mark has loaded with cancer. It started testicular. It'll be a miracle if he makes it 6 months." So I called his parents. It was a very emotional thing. Well, he went back, and he fought it hard for a year. So I got a call from his mama, and she said, "Coach, I'm embarrassed to call you." But she said, "Bob Costas is going to be, he's going to speak and at this banquet he's emceeing. We're trying to raise more money." And she said, "We went in. We know Mark doesn't have long to live. Maybe days, maybe months, maybe 6 at the most." But she said, "We asked him, Mark," she said, "What do you want to do? What request can we grant you? Mama, I want to see for one last time the three best friends on my team." Well, these three guys were his big buddies. So she said, "And I'm embarrassed." She said, "We don't have any money to," she said, "Could you get him up here?" I said, "You rest assured." So in a staff meeting one day, I was talking to my staff about them going up, and I said, "You know what?" I said, "I better call the NCAA, because there's nothing more than they would like to prove me to be a totally Elmer Gantry since I fought them for several years." And I did. Early, I could see it was, I tried to make some sense about all the money that was coming in and blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, so I called the NCAA office and told them that the governor of Louisiana had read in the paper where I was going to go up to St. Louis for this. "We can take the state plane free." So I said, "Is that okay?" "Absolutely not," the guy told me. I said, "Why?" "Well, page 422, such and such and what have you." I said, "Well, I'm telling you right now, they will be there." He said, "You turning yourself in, they'll be there." So now, not wanting to embarrass myself or give them any cannon fodder or hurt the university, so I found out there was a red-eye flight, Ron, that they could get up to St. Louis. I found a cheap little motel near the airport. The whole trip for each kid would cost $300. So out of my own pocket, I called each kid in my office like a mafia guy, pulled the blinds independently. Now, didn't call them in as a group. In an envelope, gave them $300, told them how to get their airplane fare. I'd see them up there. I felt like I needed to take a shower. Well, then I complained about it. Then the second thing that happened, and this one really is bad. We had a player from Bahia Blanca, Argentina. His name was Hernan Montenegro. I'm telling you, he could play big time, NBA. 6'11", could play every position on the floor. When we got him, my wife and I went to Argentina to recruit him. When he came with his wife and his beautiful little 3-4-year-old daughter, I wasn't aware at the time that his wife was now pregnant again. So one day, I get the call from the doctor's office. It's the nurse, and she said, "Coach Brown," she said, "the doctor needs to talk to you. It's pretty important." So we got, yes, doc. And he said, "Coach Brown," he said, "we've got Hernan's wife here," and he said, "we got a real problem." He said, "She's pregnant, and the baby's breached." And he said, "It's real dangerous, Coach. We can lose the baby, or we could lose the mother, so I'm going to have to go in cesarean and get it out." But he said, "The problem, they told us they don't have any insurance. They're foreigners." And I said, "Doc, listen, just do what you got to do. I'll figure this out." So he did go in and operate. So I called the NCAA, and I explained to them that she's in the hospital now. She's going to have emergency operation. The doctor told me, if memory serves me right, that it was $7,500 for cesarean. So a friend of mine ran a bank. I said, "Can I?" He's going to play pro ball in somewhere in Europe or NBA. "Can I just co-sign a note? They don't have a nickel to them." "Absolutely, you cannot." So again, I defied the rules. I said, "Well, it's going to get done." Well, then I got thinking, you know, I don't want to blow something for the future, and then I'm a total phony charlatan or evangelist. So I called a friend of mine that's an agent for Wynton Marsalis and musical people, and I told him about him, and I said, "He doesn't have a nickel. Can you fly down right now, sign him to a pro contract, and give them $10,000 so they can live and get this done?" He did. So he lost his eligibility. He only played 4 games of this. So that's the kind of hypocrisy that goes on. They legislate against human dignity. I'm sorry for that sermonette, but...
Well, let me get into some other things, because your coaching career has been very, very interesting. I mentioned about the 25 years as the head coach of the LSU Tigers. What did you find that basketball program to be when you took over, and what was it racially on that campus? Because you were one of the forces that brought integration about there.
It was... My friends told me I'm making a major mistake coming here. They said it's going to be a graveyard. Nobody's ever won big. It's a football school. So when I got here, I did not realize exactly how bad it really was. Now, that doesn't mean they didn't have some fleeting moments of greatness with a Bob Pettit and a Pete Maravich, but 14 out of 16 years, they had losing seasons. So it was very difficult. Plus, they were the last—they were kind of considered the last bastion of racism. They only had one black, a young man by the name of Collis Temple, phenomenal human being. So when I started, when I came to interview for the job, and it starts there, this guy asked me, well, how are you any different? He said, why should we hire you? We've never been able to have any consistency here in basketball. Why should we hire you? Which was a good, solid question. Anyone looks good in an inaugural parade, so when you're in there, everybody's giving their best shot, supposedly. And I said, well, sir, I'm not sure you should hire me, because no one yet's to ask my philosophy. And I said, so with that in mind, I want you to know this. I'll do my very best to recruit good human beings first and basketball players second. Now, we may have an all-white team, an all-black team, an all-foreign team. We may have a combination, but I am going to recruit that way. Little did I ever think. I called my wife right afterward, and she said, Dale, you should have been a kamikaze pilot in the Japanese Air Force. She said, you'd had more of a chance. They're never going to hire you. Well, they did. And it was a phenomenal experience. The AD, a man I deeply admire now that's passed, Carl Maddox, and the very few things that happened, I did get death threats on my life that I was a nigger lover, I was called, a nigger lover, the word that was never used where I grew up in North Dakota. And so that little tiny minority, the community general in Louisiana accepted them so well. We're on one road trip. We're playing at Vanderbilt. There's a knock on the door. It's a group of policemen. They have to talk to me and Collis. They call us out in the hall and tell us they just got a call. And if Brown comes out and Temple comes out the second half, they'll both be killed. The guy's got this gun and blah, blah, blah. And they said, Coach, we traced the call. It came from a payphone in the building. We suggest you don't play. I can't speak for my player, but we're going to play. Collis Temple, a real gentleman. His parents were both scholars, both academicians, teachers. He said, well, I'm playing too. But that was the only real incidents we ever had. They were really, really accepted well, which obviously they should have been.
We only have about 90 seconds before we have to break. But, Dale, when you think back to the fact that you did grow up in North Dakota and you coached at different stages, I always felt that that was the foundation for you being not only a successful coach but also being someone interested in the human element as much as the athletic element.
Well, any success I've had, I go back to my mother and my North Dakota heritage.
In what way?
Well, a combination of reasons. 2 days before I was born, my so-called father abandoned my mother and two older sisters, 12 and 11. Never wrote, never called. She had an eighth-grade education, came off the farm. Couldn't get a job. It was during the Depression in 1935, so I had to become a babysitter and clean people's homes. We had to go on welfare, $42.50 a month. But never did I ever see my mother complain. And I learned something else from her. In the 13th century, St. Francis of Assisi made a pretty profound statement. He said, everybody should preach the gospel every day, and if necessary, use words. In other words, quit trying to be a phony with all your phony bit. Just do it by action. Two times, Ron, in the middle of winter, I saw my mother. She would carefully take out she'd go to the grocery store and carry home those old sacks, and she'd cross out the peas and the corn and the bread, and occasionally we would have meat. Two times, I saw her take 40 cents and a quarter back to the Red Owl and to the Piggly Wiggly store because they gave her too much change. She lived very similar to John Wooden. John Wooden, Edgar Guest, the famous poet, described both of them well. He said, I'd rather see a lesson than to hear one any day. I'd rather you walk with me than to merely show the way. The eye's a better teacher, Ron, and more willing than the ear, and the counsel you're giving may be very fine and true, but I'd rather get my lessons by observing what you do. The work ethic in North Dakota, you work in North Dakota or you starve. So I'm very grateful for my heritage.
Dale Brown is with us on Sports Byline. By the way, there is a movie out about his life called The Man in the Glass, the Dale Brown story. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And we'll also talk about the biggest man he ever recruited, Shaquille O'Neal. We do that as we continue across the country and around the world on America's Sports Talk Show.
If you or someone you love suffers from drug addiction, now is the time to utilize your private health insurance PPO plan. If eligible, receive up to $30,000 or more in substance abuse benefits with low or no out-of-pocket cost. We are the National Treatment Network, the premier drug and alcohol treatment referral service operating 24/7. We help connect you with facilities nationwide that accepts PPO private health insurance for substance abuse. If you have PPO substance abuse coverage and you need immediate admittance to a medical detox or residential rehab treatment center, call us now. Call our live referral helpline today. The call is free. This program is not available to Medicare or Medicaid customers.
Call 800-296-0906. 800-296-0906. 800-296-0906. That's 800-296-0906.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-760-4895, 800-760-4895.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-760-4895, 800-760-4895, 800-760-4895. That's 800-760-4895.
Hi, I'm Dr. Robert Clapper, Chief of Orthopedic Surgery at Cedars-Sinai Medical Group in Los Angeles, California. Dedicated to your health, your life, and your sports. As a weekend warrior, you know about sports injuries and pain. Exercise is an important element in keeping your body's core in good shape to minimize sports injuries. But when you are in pain, there is one product that I recommend to my patients, and that is Blue Goo Gel. Blue Goo consists of a proprietary formula developed specifically for the treatment of inflammation and general muscle aches and strains. I recommend Blue Goo for my patients coping with hip and knee pain before surgery, especially bursitis and tendonitis. Give Blue Goo a try. Call 1-888-330-0123 and you'll receive a one-week supply of Blue Goo absolutely free. The makers of Blue Goo are even paying the shipping. The number again is 1-888-330-0123. If you want more information on Blue Goo, visit online at www.dothegoo.com.
Now available at select Big Five stores near you.
This is America's Sports Talk Show. Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Dale Brown has joined us on Sports Byline USA. 25 years as the head coach of the LSU Tigers. A man who was an... Were you always comfortable with the word activist? Because you always seemed to be that way.
No, I never looked at myself that way. I just two and two is four. And I believed in the human spirit. I never felt I was an activist. I just thought it was a normal thing inside of me. I tried to just do what I did. And the our team chaplain for 10 years after I retired, he took me to lunch at my favorite restaurant in Baton Rouge. And at the end of lunch, he said, "Coach, I hope I'm not going to offend you this season. I really enjoyed the 10 years with you." But he said, "Do you know why you always seem to be involved in controversy?" He said, "You got a good head on you." But he said, "You always lead with your heart instead of your head." Well, I didn't really respond. I didn't get defensive. I said, "Well, thanks for telling me that, Padre." So I got home that night. I pondered what he said. The next day, 8 o'clock in the morning, I called him, and I said, "Father, yesterday when we were at lunch, I said, I think it was conspicuous. I didn't reply to you. I said I wasn't being defensive or whatever, but I thought it over. You're 100% correct. And I'm not justifying stupid mistakes I made or stupid statements I made, but I said, I can control my head, but I can't control my heart. So they came from my heart."
That's a great story. Let me ask you about Shaquille O'Neal, because everybody knows you kind of launched him along the way in his basketball career. But that first meeting was in the mountains in West Germany when he was only 13 years old. And you had some great advice for him, because he was cut from his high school team because they told him he was too clumsy and that he should try to go out and play some soccer. Tell me about that first meeting.
Communism was real heavy at that time, of course, and so we'd go over, and in the summer, they'd send over to 80, 90,000 troops and mass them along the East German border. Well, this one summer, the State Department sent over 80 to 90,000 troops, and I got a call from them, and they said they're going to do military drills all the way up and down the East German border. Would I go speak to the troops starting in southern Germany? I would be honored to do it. And I went over then. It was fatiguing. I was out in the field. I'd been there in numerous states. I had one spot left, a place called Wildflecken, which is an area, historically, when Europe's invaded, they come through there. We had a cracked armor division there. So I had agreed, after speaking to the officers on leadership and the enlisted men on the best potential, a me as we type of thing, you know, teamwork, they asked me if I'd do a, I'd agreed prior to do a clinic that night. So I finished the clinic, and I was rather ecstatic. I'm finally getting back to the bayous. I get a tap on the shoulder, and I pack in my bag, and I turn around. Fine-looking guy, khaki pants, I can still see him, polo shirt, clean tennis shoes. And he sort of stuttered, Coach Brown. He said, I'll be trying out for the team here. And he said, I run up and down the court about three, four times. And he said, my lower extremities get so tired. And he said, I can't dunk the ball, Coach. And while he's talking, I'm thinking, this guy can't dunk the ball. He's about 6'9 and 250. And he said, so can you show me some exercises I can use? Well, not having any weights available, I did come find the podium, spent 5-10 minutes maximum, showed him some non-resistance exercises he could use. I went back and got a pen and piece of paper, and I said, soldier, what I'm going to do? As soon as I get back to Baton Rouge, I'll send you our weight training program. How long you been in service, soldier? Almost embarrassed, he cupped his hand over his mouth and sort of shyly turned away. And he, Coach Brown, he said, I'm not in service. I said, you're not? He said, Coach Brown, I'm only 13 years old. Being the Rhodes Scholar I am, graduating from a school of 500 called Minor State Teachers College, my next question, where's your dad? He says, he's in the sauna. I said, let's go meet him. We head to the sauna, Ron. Just putting my hand on that wooden door, I can still see it. It pops open, and out of the sauna comes this big, burly man with a towel wrapped around his neck, profusely sweating. There, that's my dad. So I, Sergeant, I said, my name's, I handed my business card. My name's Dale Brown, head basketball coach at LSU. And I said, if your son ever starts to develop, excuse me, Coach Brown, he put his open hand up to my, about a foot from my face. I'm not trying to be rude, but he said, can I say something to you? Almost with disdain, he looked at my card. He said, I said, certainly. So I don't mean to offend you or anything, but he said, I think it's doggone time blacks start developing some intellectualism. He said, so they can be presidents of a corporation instead of janitors, and they can be a general instead of a sergeant like me. If you're interested in my son's intellect, someday we might talk. Well, obviously, that really turned me on. I liked his forcefulness. I liked his honesty. So now I send the weight training program. Basketball, obviously, is a few weeks away. We start practice, I'd say 2 months after that. I'm heading to practice. My secretary runs down the hall. Coach, I think you want this. I ripped it open on the way over to the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. It was a letter from Shaq, and it basically said, Dear Coach Brown, I did everything you told me to do, and they cut me off the high school team. They told me I'm too slow, I'm too clumsy, I have too big a feet, that I should probably consider playing soccer and be a goalie. What should I do, Coach Brown? Man, the whole time in practice, Ronnie, I was distracted. I got back. My secretary left. I sat behind the desk, and I thought, now what kind of a profound statement am I going to make a 13-year-old child that just had his heart broken? And all of a sudden it dawned on me, I'm going to tell him about my life. So I sat down and just started scribbling my own handwritten letter. Dear Shaq, I'm so sorry what happened to you. However, I found out in my life, every time I failed, every time someone I couldn't make it, every time I had my heart broken, I always implemented the following, and it worked pretty good for me. I bet if you do, it'll work for you, and it's fairly simple. If you always try to do your best, if you never give up, eventually God will take care of everything else. Well, I'm not naive enough to think that that one moment stimulated him into greatness. But let me tell you what, if there's a better one than him, I don't know. And it's amazing you bring his name up. This afternoon, I was in my office with the director of this documentary that they made, The Man in the Glass, and UPS came just prior to them coming. And it's Shaq's new book. I have it in front of me right now, Shaq Uncut, My Story, Shaquille O'Neal. On the inside cover, I read to you exactly what he wrote. To Coach Dale Brown, you made me the man I am. Thank you, Shaq. And then at the bottom, big bold print, LSU forever. That's the kind of person he is. He looks like King Kong. He's so big and strong, but he's really Bambi. He's one of the most benevolent, nicest, scholarly young men. By the way, he'll have his doctorate this spring.
Amazing story, and I have so much more I want to talk to you about. We only have a couple minutes left, and before I kick you loose here, I want to ask you about something that you wrote to him after his rookie year in the NBA. This was back in 1993. You listed a number of things for him as you complimented him on his rookie year, and one of them was that jumped out at me was, be a good listener. What did you mean by that, Dale?
There's a light year of difference between hearing and listening. Hearing is just you hear the sounds, but you don't absorb them. You get defensive. You don't put them up in your mind. You don't digest them. Listening is you actually take up in your mind. You listen. Now, it's your decision. What is this person telling me? Is it false? Is it true? Can I learn from it? And I told kids at the beginning of every practice, the best listeners will wind up being the best players. Well, years pass. I've now retired. He's now in the NBA. He gives me the most beautiful picture. It's a timeout, just not a timeout. It's apparently a free throw. He's standing over with his hands on his knees, and I'm having my hands in the air and in his ear saying something. And he says on the picture, "Dear Coach Brown, because you taught me how to listen, they now say I might be the best center in the history of the NBA. Thanks." So in other words, quit being defensive. Quit having all the answers. Listen. Be a good listener.
We only have about 90 seconds left, but when you think back on your long, successful career, is there a moment that's kind of galvanized in your mind, Dale, that's crystallized in your mind about what you did in basketball?
No, it really, there really wasn't. I think this documentary that they just did, The Man in the Glass, which when they first talked to me about it, I was a little hesitant doing it, because I didn't want it to be a glorification, but I looked at it as a whole. We are mentors, and that's what I'm so pleased that they did in this film, Man in the Glass. They really showed that mentoring is important. Sure, you got to win to keep your job in order. So I don't have a defining moment. There's ups and downs and what have you, and it's your ability to be able to handle the good with the bad. And that's just like life, Ron.
Yeah, I think what I remember most about your career is watching your teams. They always enjoyed and they were engaged in the game. But also, I think what you did in developing them as people as well as athletes is the thing that I think is your legacy, Dale.
Well, I know we don't have much time, but I would close on this. When I first went in to recruit as a head coach, you know, I'm a rookie. And I'm going to the person's home. As I'm driving up, I thought, you know, everybody gives the same lingo, you know, just we got this, we got that, you're this, you can do that, you can start. And I thought, I'm not going to do that. It sounds like a snake oil salesman. I don't want to do that. So when I got out of the car, it just dawned on me. I walked in, I sat with the parents or the parent, I can't remember which one, the two or one was there at the time. But I said, I know I'm here recruiting your son as a basketball player, but I said, I give you my vow right now. I promise you I'm recruiting him as a human being first and a basketball player second.
Dale Brown with us on Sports Byline USA. We continue on America's Sports Talk Show.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1780. 855-325-1780. That's 855-325-1780.
Imagine a store that lets you get anything you wanted
an HD flat screen TV, a high capacity ultra quiet washer and dryer, a complete living room set. And imagine if you didn't need a lick of credit to get it. That store simply believed in you. Imagine if they even delivered it, set it up, and serviced it at no additional cost. Well, that store exists. That's Rent-A-Center. Imagine that. No credit needed. Affordable payment plans. Delivery, setup, and service included. Imagine new possibilities at Rent-A-Center. Rental purchase transaction. See store for details.
Attention to anyone that's written a book or wants to write a book. The process is not that complicated. Take a first step. Even if you write a page a day, you'll build momentum and your book will become a reality. The hard part is getting it published. That's when you need to call Page Publishing. They've got hundreds and hundreds of thank yous from different new authors, just like you. They make the process of publishing your new book and getting it sold online a simple process. You can learn how simple it is right now by calling for your free Page Publishing new author submission kit. One quick 3-minute phone call, that's all it takes to get free information and learn how you can get your book published. Pick up your phone right now and call us 24 hours a day at this number. 800-603-0885. 800-603-0885. 800-603-0885. That's 800-603-0885.
The Lodge at Tiburon is steps from the ferry docks and nestled among Tiburon's upscale boutiques, charming cafes, and unique galleries. Dine at the award-winning Tiburon Tavern, serving innovative dishes prepared with ingredients grown in our very own gardens, starting from $199 a night. Join us at the Lodge at Tiburon and create long-lasting memories. For reservations, call 1-877-614-6068. Join us at the Lodge at Tiburon or go to lodgeattiburon.com.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Lincoln Mitchell joins us on Sports Byline. He's been with us recently because he had an outstanding book. It's fascinating. It's called Will Big League Baseball Survive? Globalization, the End of Television, Youth Sports, and the Future of Major League Baseball. And I also saw that he had written an article about the WBC, the World Baseball Classic, and in particular, the Israeli team, which was appearing in the WBC for the first time. Lincoln, tell everybody what this article was about.
Well, I wrote this article because I had attended the last game of the qualifying round in Brooklyn, where Israel beat Great Britain for the final seat in the World Baseball Classic. And the crowd was, let's just say, heavily supporting Israel, as frankly I was. And after the game, you know, the final out was made, everyone cheered, and I overheard somebody say behind me, well, it looks like the United States has a second team in the World Baseball Classic. And what struck me about this is that, you know, the Israeli team is, other than two people, it is Americans, American Jews. Now, politically, this is fascinating, because Major League Baseball, unlike a lot of other international sports organizations, has recognize the organic relationship between all Jews everywhere in the world and the state of Israel. And I know that maybe not all your listeners will agree with that, but it's certainly a widely held view, certainly among Jews, whether American Israel or somewhere else. And it gave the opportunity to Jewish American ballplayers to play for Israel. The problem with that is that there's a couple of problems with that. One, despite the fact that there are, in fact, two American Jews on the world, on the American team, it gives credence to this kind of tired anti-Semitic trope that Jews aren't good at sports. You know, they're not good enough to play with the American team, so there's a second team for them. And obviously, the Israeli team was never going to be as good as the American team, although, you know, it did pretty well. The second piece is that we live in a time where, you know, there is an increasing anti-Semitism in the United States. And, you know, for a Dominican, American-born Dominican like Dylan Betances to play for the Dominican Republic, nobody says, you know, maybe he has due loyalty. But, you know, the sad reality is that Jewish Americans and Jews all over the world confront that, and historically have confronted that, you know, over the centuries, even before the founding of the State of Israel. So I was just wondering in my piece, is this good for the Jews? Is this something that, on the one hand, the success of the Israeli baseball team was the biggest Jewish sports story in many, many years. It was a very big deal. I would say maybe as far back as Sandy Koufax didn't start game one of the 65 World Series. On the other hand, it kind of highlighted this, you know, separated American Jews out from the rest of Americans and raised some of these other issues.
What is the history of Jews in baseball, particularly, I mean, Israel in baseball?
Well, I actually had a long discussion with Jerry Weinstein, who managed the Israeli baseball team in the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, there is no real history of Jews, of Israelis in baseball, which is weird when you think of the strong connections. I shouldn't say that. There's not much of a history. There are the strong connections between the two countries, and that American Jews love baseball. And I say that, I mean, I certainly am flustered about that, but there are, you know, there have been academic research to demonstrate that, or to argue why. And one of the reasons they say is that when Jews came here from other countries, particularly, you know, the 1890s and 1900s, when there was a huge massive immigration from Europe, unlike other European immigrants, Jews had no interest in going back, right? Italians and Irish, actually, 40% of them returned. No Jews returned, because you'd be crazy to go back to that, you know, not to be to be very clear. And they embraced things that were uniquely American. And baseball was uniquely American. So American Jews have always been passionate about baseball. There was a short-lived Israeli baseball league around 2013. It only lasted one season. It ended in some financial impropriety with someone disappearing with a chunk of money. But it was noted that some of the managers were old Jewish ballplayers. And one of my cousins who lived in Israel went to one of the games and managed to get a photo autographed by Art Chamsky, the old Mets ballplayer who was managing, and her husband is a big Mets fan over there, so they sent that to me for birthday present. So there was a little bit of a history, but if you put the 25 best Israeli players, they wouldn't be one of the top 40 teams in the world.
You know, when I think about baseball and Jews, I think of course, for a long time, you mentioned 65, Sandy Koufax, but I guess Hank Greenberg are the only ones that jump into my mind at that period of time. Am I correct? Were there very many in the major leagues?
Well, there were many in the sense of the three New York teams in particular always wanted to find a Jewish star, right? Because of the star power that would bring. You know, so many Jewish fans, if you got a Jewish star in the Bronx, you know, in Brooklyn or even in Northern Manhattan where the New York Giants played, it would be a real drawing card. The one player you're missing, there were others, but the one major star you're missing is Al Rosen, who we know him here in San Francisco because he was president of the Giants and a well-respected baseball executive, but a very, very good third baseman for the Cleveland Indians. He won the MVP, I want to say, either 52 or 53, drove in, you know, 150 runs that year, was, you know, a top defensive player and a very big, tough guy. So he was the kind of that between Greenberg and Koufax. There's Al Rosen. Yeah. There's a lot more Jewish ball players. Not that strange anymore. Ian Kinsler, Kevin Youkilis, Ryan Braun. You know, there are a few Americans we discussed, you know, we discussed in the book the first time, playing in the big leagues as a proportion. And there are fewer Jews as a proportion of the American population. So if you figure that calculation, Jews may in fact now be overrepresented in Major League Baseball, which would surprise a lot of people to hear that.
In that qualifying round for the last spot in the WBC, there were two of the other teams were from Muslim countries, that was Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. Was it important that Israel advance on to the main draw of the WBC for political reasons?
I should make a correction. It was Brazil, not Saudi Arabia. It was one Muslim country. That was my mistake.
Okay.
There was, you know, what was striking, and look, there's a large Pakistani population in New York. And in fact, some of the public schools in New York, the public high schools, have cricket games. But the cricket season is the same as the baseball season, so you have to kind of choose. But what was very striking, and this is in Brooklyn, which has a vibrant Jewish community, a vibrant Muslim community, immigrants from all over the world. And there was no tension. It was really good fellowship and good sportsmanship. And there was handshakes and no one snubbed anybody. I mean, baseball has done what other international sports organizations have struggled to do, which is to get Israeli athletes and athletes from Muslim countries to play each other with the best that sports can do, which is to bring people together in fair and hard competition, and they succeeded in that in Brooklyn. So that's really something that Major League Baseball did well with the World Baseball Classic.
Quoting from your article, you say it provides fodder for those who believe that Jews are not quite true Americans and are more loyal to Israel than they are to the U.S. during a time when the President of the United States promotes the old anti-Semitic slogan, America First. This is something that cannot be ignored. Explain a little bit further about that. That's a powerful statement.
Well, you know, it's striking. I mean, America First, when you hear it in that speech that the President gave his inauguration speech, you know, for many Americans, that just suggests this kind of weird isolationism or some kind of we're going to try to get better trade deals. But, you know, my father, for example, is 82 years old. He was born in 1934. Now, as he is, you know, eternally grateful, he was born in New Jersey in 1934. So he was here during the Holocaust. But when he heard those words, when his parents heard those words, America first, the next sentence that Charles Lindbergh would say was, let's not have the Jews bring us into a foreign war. Right? That is a very explicit, it's not even code, it's just explicit language. And when the president says that, the people who are the anti-Semites, look, I don't think most Americans are anti-Semites. I don't think most Americans are walking around angry at the Jews for some plot to, you know, take over the world of the media or something. But some are. And those people understand that language. And those people will say, look, you know, they're even going to play for America, right? Why is, you know, like, he can't hear a thing to play for America. That's what his real loyalty was. I think that's troubling. Now, on balance, is it good? Probably. It's good for baseball. I think it is. I think the Israeli team conducted themselves well. And I think both the Israeli sports leaders in Israel and the American Jews on the team really made an effort to bring some commonalities together. And by the end, many Israeli sports fans were paying attention. I'll tell you one very funny story. My cousin, who grew up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan and is a Yankee fan, although she's married to a Mets fan, so there may be some complexity with how they raise the kids. But she's a Yankee fan, and I had been updating them on email about the games, and she was out shopping for Purim, and she ran into somebody who said to her, hey, you know, Israel beat Cuba, because by then people were beginning to talk about it. But they heard her American accent, and they said, you know, Israel beat Cuba. And she said, yeah, you know, Cuba's like, that's a real baseball country. That's a big deal. And this Israeli guy says to her, what are you, a baseball expert? Which is, you know, that's kind of how Israel. And she responded, no, but my cousin is. But Israel did, it became a story there. It became a very good story there. And I think that on balance was very good. People here in San Francisco who care about the Giants, but not international and not that seriously, were paying a lot of attention as well.
What does the participation and the limited success that the Israeli team had in the WBC do for the game in Israel, do you think?
I think it will push it along. I think it will push it along a little bit. I think that people will say, this is interesting. This is something that, you know, this is something that we can do. I mean, there's not too many team sports where Israel's going to finish in the top eight in a global championship, right? And, you know, I think that there are so many American Jews who are interested in seeing baseball grow in Israel that there is real opportunity there to build it. And that would be very exciting.
A lot of our listeners are probably younger and don't know about Sandy Koufax, as you said, back in 1965 with the Dodgers and, of course, played and pitched three complete games in the World Series. But tell them a little bit about the history of him as far as the game goes.
It's a very significant story. Sandy Koufax was, of course, you know, maybe along with Hank Greenberg, and you could argue whether you want to flip into a slugger or a pitcher, but, you know, one of the two greatest Jewish players ever. And for 5 years was the best pitcher on the planet, and it absolutely, you know, just a dominant, you know, best basketball in the league, best curveball in the league, you know, very good, go up and give you 300 and change innings every year. And in 1965, the first game of the World Series fell on Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. And he had never pitched on Yom Kippur. Now, it usually, sometimes might fall late in the regular season, sometimes afterward, it never been that big of a deal. But, you know, unless you come from a family like my parents, who are kind of radically secular, no Jew would ever play baseball in Yom Kippur. And he refused him. And a couple things happened. First, you know, the Dodgers said, okay, you'll pitch game two. And he actually pitched games 2, 5, and 7. So 7 on very short rest. And he threw a complete game shutout in game 7, and, you know, they won the World Series. But the interesting story is that the manager of that team was Walter Alston. And, you know, I don't know how much of the listeners may know about the 1965 Dodgers. They had some pretty good pitchers. So he actually, because he couldn't start Sandy Koufax, he had the good fortune to be able to start another future Hall of Famer, Don Drysdale. And Don Drysdale was, you know, he was a hard-throwing righty. Until Earl Hershiser broke the record, most consecutive shutout innings. And he had kind of what might call, you know, Hollywood good look. He was that kind of a guy. And he went out there, it was in Minnesota against the Twins, and he did not do well. I don't know if you know this story. He did not do well. You know, this was a good Twins team. Tony Oliva, Coleman Killebrew, they had some real hitters. Thurlow Rosales, who had won the MVP that year. And the third or fourth inning, Alston came to take him out because the Dodgers were losing and he didn't have it. And Drysdale, as he hands him the ball, looks at him and says, I bet you wish I were Jewish today, too.
You know, the other thing, too, is when you think about the WBC, it's kind of a manufactured event, and I'm not quite sure I agree with the reasons for it. But what do you think it has done for baseball?
You know, I was very fortunate to be able to go to a couple of games this year. I was in San Diego earlier last week, so I went to two of the semifinal games. I thought it was great. I mean, it was, as a fan, if you put yourself in the shoes of a fan, it's a great way to see a baseball game. In San Diego, they had the All-Star game last year. But, you know, this is a one-city team, a one-team city. And, you know, you go out there and for relatively cheap prices, I mean, we bought, you know, through the Padres tickets, we didn't have a deal or anything, you know, $30 on the third row off the field, and you are seeing great players. I mean, the American, Buster Posey, Manny Machado, you know, Lindor and Francisco Lindor, these are great players. So, but it is much more, you know, it doesn't have the intensity for the fans, for the American fans, right? I think most American fans would be very happy to see, you know, their team win the World Series rather than the U.S. team win the World Baseball Classic. And the U.S. team may, in fact, win the World Baseball Classic tonight. But for the fans from Japan, the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, it's a very big deal. They take it very seriously. And I think it's a lot of fun. I think it makes baseball fun because it's a little less pressure for the fans if their team has to win. It's high-quality baseball. And interestingly, it raises for me a lot of questions. It's a tournament format. You know, you bring these four teams together, and it's a round-robin, double-elimination kind of tournament. That's a fun format to watch. You know, Puerto Rico plays the U.S. one day and Venezuela the next, and then Jamaica plays Venezuela or something. You know, you still have to go through your pitching rotation. You still have to do that kind of almost play almost every day. It's not playing a series, which is what we're used to. You know, I think this is going to be limited until you find a way to either compel or incentivize the best players to play, right?
Right.
The U.S. is up for the global championship tomorrow, and Marcus Strohan is pitching. He's not the best American pitcher, right? The catcher was Jonathan Lucroy because his manager, Bruce Bochy, who is Buster Posey's manager, have said they don't want their catchers catching every day, which is a reasonable position if you're a big league manager.
Lincoln Mitchell with us, and again, he wrote this article about the Israeli team in the World Baseball Classic. Very interesting article as well, and you heard what he had to say about how much it means to the Israelis and the Jewish players that are on the Israeli team as well. We continue with more of you and America's Sports Talk Show.
Listen closely. You don't have to live with knee pain. You heard right. If you're 65 or older and suffering from knee pain, you may qualify for an advanced pain-relieving brace at little to no cost to you. Doctor Approved Medical, America's trusted resource for knee braces, will work with Medicare or insurance benefits to see if you qualify for these knee braces. Many people are now using our knee brace as an alternative to surgery or harmful medications and experience pain relief they haven't felt in years. The only way to see if you qualify is to call us. 800-816-0365. One of our friendly experts will handle all paperwork and have it delivered for free. Don't let your knee pain turn into something worse. Find out now about these advanced knee braces now covered by Medicare or insurance benefits. Call now and get free shipping, plus a complimentary, easy-to-use pedometer. 800-816-0365. 800-816-0365. 800-816-0365. Little to no cost with full insurance payment, copay, and deductible. Supply and promo subject to qualification while supplies last. This is a health warning from Doctor Approved Medical, America's trusted resource for back braces. If you're 65 or older and suffering from back pain, you may qualify to receive an advanced pain-relieving back brace at little or no cost to you. Many people are now using our pain-relieving back brace as an alternative to surgery or harmful medications and experience pain relief that they haven't felt in years. Don't let your back pain turn into something worse. Remember, if you qualify for no money out of pocket, there's nothing to lose and only real pain relief to gain. Our friendly team of experts will handle all paperwork and will deliver it for free. Just call 800-507-1148. Your pain-relieving back brace may be covered by Medicare at little or no cost to you. Call our hotline now and get free shipping, plus a complimentary, easy-to-use pedometer. 800-507-1148. 800-507-1148. 800-507-1148. Little to no cost with full insurance payment, copay, and deductible. Supply promo subject to qualification while supplies last.
Hey travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1780. 855-325-1780. That's 855-325-1780.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
And that's going to wrap up this hour of Sports Byline. I told you it would be interesting with Dale Brown, 25 years as the head coach at LSU, and he also became the head coach at LSU, replacing Press Maravich, went on to be a two-time National Coach of the Year, and he took LSU to the Final Four on two different occasions. And then Lincoln Mitchell was with us. If you have a chance, check out his book. It's an interesting read about baseball and socialization. It's called Will Big League Baseball Survive? Globalization, the End of Television, Youth Sports, and the Future of Major League Baseball. Also, if you have a chance, check out the award-winning Sports Byline USA website. You can listen to us anytime online. Just go to the homepage at sportsbyline.com, and at the top of the page, hit that Listen Live button. I'm Ron Barr. Thanks for being a part of America's Sports Talk Show.
This is Joe Spano.
And this is Bob Black.
The Spano and Black Attack, now on from 5 a.m. Pacific Time till 7 a.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday. The Spano and Black Attack, the best sports talk on the best sports talk network, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.